This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents Riveted, a Saints of Denver novel by Jay Crownover. Performed by Stephanie Wiles and Sean Bassett.
If you're going through hell, keep going. Winston Churchill. Prologue. My mom met her Prince Charming when she was a freshman in college, and my dad leaned over and asked to borrow a pen so he could take notes. Rumpled, obviously hungover, but flashing a smile that promised a good time, and with a twinkle in his eyes, he was impossible to resist. She always told me and my sister that it happened that fast. In a split second, she knew he was the one for her. It was a sweet story, one that my parents shared with us often, both still sharing private smiles and eyes still twinkling. But neither one of us gave it much thought until my younger sister met her very own prince before she was old enough to drive. It was during a hard time for my family, hard for all of us, but especially for her. She'd always been the baby, been spoiled and treated like a princess. When the attention was yanked off of her in a really ugly way, she was lost and let the family tragedy consume her. Lost in grief and confusion, she somehow managed to sign herself up for auto shop instead of an extracurricular that actually made sense for my very girly, very feminine younger sibling. She spent 5 minutes in that noisy, greasy garage, but she spent years and years leaning on and loving the quiet, enigmatic, auburn-haired boy she met in those 5 minutes. He saved her, and even though she was way too young to know anything about anything, she had the same story that my mother did. She just knew he was the one for her. It happened fast in my family. We fell hard, and we didn't get up once we fell. We stayed down, and we loved hard and deep. I also learned as I watched all my friends, the men I worked with, the women that I considered sisters of the heart, that when it was right for anyone, it happened fast, and that they did indeed just know. They knew when it was right. They knew when it was going to last. They knew when it was worth fighting for. They knew when they had found the person that might not necessarily be perfect, but that was without a doubt perfect for them. They just knew. So I waited, admittedly, impatiently, and anxiously, for my shot, for my turn to fall. I waited through my family healing, for them to come back with a love that was even stronger. I waited through my sister screwing up and desperately trying to repair her perfect. I waited and watched so many weddings and babies that weren't mine. I waited through danger and drama. I waited through one bad date and one failed relationship after another. I waited through nights alone and nights spent with the occasional someone I knew wasn't the one for me. I waited and waited as good men fell for even better women, all the while wondering when it would be my turn. I waited and watched love that was easy and love that was hard, telling myself I was far more prepared for my fall than anyone else around me was. I wanted it so bad I could taste it. But the more I waited, the more certain I became that I was never going to fall. I would be lying if I said that I didn't think Dash Churchill was something special the second he walked into the bar where I worked. All coiled tension, sexy swagger, and with a swirling, threatening cloud of attitude hanging over him that would dim even the brightest summer days. I had eyes and I had a vagina, so all the things that I thought were special were the things those parts of my anatomy couldn't miss. Long-limbed, with a body that looked like it was ripped from the cover of Men's Health magazine, bronze skin, unforgettable eyes, and a mouth that, even though it was constantly frowning, brought to mind every single dirty, sexy thing a pair of lips like that was capable of doing. I liked the way he looked, a lot, but I couldn't say I much liked him. He was sullen, distant, uncommunicative, and there was an air about him that marked, in no uncertain terms, that he was dangerous and volatile. He came across as a very unhappy individual, and no amount of rest, relaxation, and good friends seemed to shake that dark shroud of discontentment that hung over him. His amazing eyes flashed warnings that I was smart enough to heed. I liked my days spent basking in the sun, not dancing in the rain. I was friendly to church because I was friendly to everyone. The first month or so, we had an uneasy working relationship that involved me dancing around him while every other single and not-so-single woman that came into the bar, where we worked, did their best to catch his eye. It worked out well for me and seemingly for him, so I went back to waiting for my perfect, my fairy tale, my heroic knight, my unmatched hero. He had to be out there somewhere, and I was starting to think if he wasn't looking for me, I needed to start looking for him. My patience was wearing thin, and my typically affable attitude was starting to get just as gloomy and gray as the one that hung over church. But then it happened, and I just knew. I knew like I had never known anything as clearly and as unquestionably in my whole life. I knew with a rightness that shot through my soul and made my heart flip over in my chest. I was trying to cash out a group of overly intoxicated and obnoxiously difficult young men. It wasn't anything new. I'd been a cocktail waitress for a long time, and knew how to handle myself and the customers. This drunken group was no better or worse than any other one I'd had to deal with in all my years slinging drinks and working the floor. But they were loud, and the things they were saying were easily heard throughout the bar. Some of it wasn't so bad. They liked my hair, curly and strawberry blonde. Who didn't like my damn hair? And they liked the way my shirt fit tight and snug across my chest. I was a solid D cup, so, again, who didn't like my tits? But they also had a lot to say about my ass. Apparently it was too big for my small frame, and they didn't love my freckles. That red hair was authentic and as real as it could be, so there wasn't much I could do about the colored specks that dotted the bridge of my nose and brushed the curve of my cheeks. I had pretty thick skin. You had to when you worked in a bar and liquor loosened tongues. So I was ready to brush the entire conversation off and snatch the credit card off the table when I felt a hand on my lower back and a storm not just brewing off in the distance, but collecting and gathering, ready to unleash hell at my back.
You good, Dixie?
The question made me freeze, and it wasn't because it was asked into my ear with an unmistakable slow and very southern drawl. It wasn't because he was so close I could feel every line of muscle in his massive body and both the heat of his skin and the chill of his icy anger pressing into my back. No, I froze, riveted to the spot and stunned stupid. Because in 26 years, no one had ever bothered to ask me if I was good. They always assumed I was. I was the girl that could handle myself and everyone else around me. I was the girl that never asked for help. I was the girl that always smiled, even when that smile hurt my face. I was the girl that always had an ear to bend or a shoulder to lean on for a friend, even when I really didn't have time. I was the girl that everyone ran to with a problem because I would drop everything to help fix it, even if it was unfixable. I was the girl that never let anything or anyone drag her down and fought to keep everyone else up with her. I was the girl that everyone always assumed was good, so they never asked. But he had, and the world stopped. I gripped my pen and struggled to clear my throat. I'm good, Church. My voice was barely a breath of sound, and I felt his touch press even deeper into my lower back.
You sure?
No, I wasn't sure. I was as far from good as I had ever been, and I had no clue what to do about it. I gave a jerky nod and blew out a breath, which had him taking a step away from me. I looked at him over my shoulder, and he returned the look. There was no warmth in his fantastic eyes. There was no change in the harsh expression on his face. There was no knowledge that he had fundamentally changed my life in the span of a few terse words. He was simply doing his job, making sure everything in the bar was okay and that the staff was safe. Meanwhile, I was shoved, unwillingly, into the kind of love that had my arms flailing, my legs kicking, while a scream ripped from my lungs in love with him. Of course, I did that all silently and in my head as he walked away from me, because I might have now known he was it for me, but it was evident Church didn't have a clue. No one had ever given me any idea how to handle it when the right one came along. but you weren't the right one for him. There is no such thing as darkness, only a failure to see. Malcolm Muggeridge. Chapter 1. Dixie. I had a lovely evening. No, I hadn't. It was awful. It would go down as the worst first date in the history of first dates, which was something, considering my recent run, as the awful first date queen. But it wasn't in my nature to say so. All I wanted to do was say goodnight and go hide in my bedroom with a glass of wine and my dog for the rest of the evening. Aren't you going to invite us in for a drink? I fought to hold back a cringe and looked over the shoulder of the very cute but painfully shy young man I had accepted the date with after several weeks of online chatting. I'd met him through one of the dating apps I had signed up for when I decided I was done waiting for my perfect to realize that I was perfect for him. My terrible luck in love had held true, and this date, with this cute boy, and his mother, the person who had asked about coming in for a drink since my actual date seemed incapable of speech. Yep, it solidified the fact that I was bound to end up alone. That beautiful, blinding thing that everyone important in my life that I loved seemed to find with such ease was clearly not in the cards for me. I wanted a fantasy, but every day was faced with the fact that all I was getting was cold, hard, and very lonely reality. I sighed and reached up to push some of my wayward, strawberry-colored curls out of my face. I was annoyed that not only had I clearly been catfished, there was no way the son was the one running his dating profile, not if he couldn't string two words together, and not if he couldn't look at me without blushing and trembling nervously. But by the fact that I had wasted a perfectly cute outfit, killer hair, and a face full of flawless makeup on this sham of a date. I was typically a very low-maintenance kind of girl, so pulling myself together like this took time and effort that I would never have expended if I had known it was all for a woman with crazy eyes and a psychotic interest in finding her grown child a suitable mate. Honestly, I was surprised the woman hadn't asked for blood and urine samples before the appetizers arrived. She'd grilled me like I was a POW for the entire date, and when my answers didn't meet her expectations, I could feel her disappointment wafting from across the table. Anyone else would have gotten up the instant their date showed up with parental supervision. They would have chalked it up as a loss and deleted the guy off the app. I, unfortunately, wasn't wired that way. Nope, I was predisposed to believe every situation, no matter how bad, had a silver lining. I thought maybe my date would loosen up and tried to reason that it was actually kind of sweet he was so close to his mom. I figured after dinner and the interrogation, I would be vetted enough that maybe he would want to do something without our eagle-eyed chaperone. I thought his shy demeanor made him seem vulnerable, and that he was even more adorable in person than he was in his profile picture. It didn't get better. It got worse, and I quickly realized the lining was never going to be silver, because it was made out of lead, and I was sinking with it to the bottom of the bad date ocean. I tried to think of a polite way to get out of the rest of the evening, but the woman wouldn't give me a minute to breathe. She went as far as to follow me to the bathroom, so I couldn't send out an SOS call to one of my friends for a convenient escape. It was brutal, but I powered through, thinking once they followed me home and saw me to the door in an old-fashioned but still over-the-top gesture, that it would be over. I had a boatload of nosy neighbors and a big dog in my apartment, so I didn't fret too much about him knowing where I lived. The mom was a different story. I was wrong. I shifted my weight on my feet and bit back a sigh. I should have known she was going to be persistent, but I was done playing nice for her when it was clear her son was so beaten down that he was too scared to make a move or even speak for himself. She was a tyrant, and I wasn't going to subject myself to her vile company anymore. As soon as I slipped inside my apartment, I was going to delete all the dating apps I had on my phone. I have a dog, and she's leery around strangers. That was partly true. I did have a dog, a massive blue pit bull that I rescued from a shelter just days before she was supposed to be put down. Dolly looked like a brute, but she was a sweetheart and had never met a human she didn't want tummy scratches and love from. We were kind of kindred spirits in that way. I mean, I didn't need my ears scratched or my belly rubbed. But I was afflicted with the same pressing need to be liked and accepted by pretty much everyone I came in contact with. It was ingrained in me to at least try to make everyone a friend. And if they didn't reciprocate my kindness, it only forced me to try harder. Sometimes I hated that about myself, and sometimes it was my favorite personality trait, because the men and women in my life weren't the easiest nuts to crack. They all loved me and let me in, because I'd refused to let them shut me out. Well, all except for one man. I couldn't hold back my flinch when he crossed my mind, because he had warned me about online dating from the get-go, and I hated that he was right about it. I also hated that he was the reason I was desperate to find a man who wasn't him in the first place. Mommy Dearest shook her head and clicked her tongue at me. Joseph is allergic to dogs. Your pet will have to go as things progress between the two of you. I felt my eyes pop wide, and the forced smile I had plastered on my face for the entire evening finally slipped away. I already knew she had a few screws loose, but she was taking her crazy to another level if she thought she could tell me to get rid of my dog or what to do with anything in my life. I straightened my shoulders and tilted my chin up. It was a look that worked on the drunks and unruly college kids that I hustled out of the bar where I worked every night. That's not going to be a problem, because things are not progressing beyond my front door. Thank you both for dinner, but if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go inside and cuddle my dog and erase every online dating app there is. The woman narrowed her eyes and stepped around her son. The young man made a noise low in his throat and his eyes widened. I thought he was scared of his mom, but the closer I looked at him, the more obvious it became that he was scared for me as the woman advanced. He reached out a hand to grab his mother's elbow, but it fell away before making contact, like he knew the repercussions for intervening would be severe and drastic. "Listen here, you little—" I lifted my hand before she could throw at me whatever insulting word she was going to label me with. I don't think the woman was used to anyone standing their ground with her, because she gasped and fell back a step. "Stop. I thought I was talking to Joseph. I thought he was a nice guy. Maybe a little sheltered and awkward, but a nice guy. Obviously, it wasn't him running his dating profile, and there was some other agenda here from the start. I'm well past the age where I need a mother's approval or permission to date her son. So I'm going to go into my apartment and end this date before either side gets nasty." I looked at the shell-shocked young man hovering behind his mother and mouthed, "Good luck," before turning my back on both of them and inserting my key into the door. Dolly barked loud and deep from the other side, which was both comforting and reassuring. I turned the knob on the door and pushed into the apartment without looking back. Once the door was shut and my dog was happily rubbing against my legs, I tossed my head back and let out a sigh that felt like it was tied to my soul. I was tired, so tired. I loved my life. I had a job that I enjoyed going to every day, and I worked with people I adored and admired. I was never going to be a millionaire doing what I did, but I was good at it, and most of the time it felt more like spending time with friends than actual work. I loved and was deeply loved back by my family, even if my younger sister was an idiot. I had a cute apartment, an active social life, and great freaking hair. There wasn't a lot I could complain about on a day-to-day basis, and things that did get under my skin were things I had a hard time explaining to anyone that didn't grow up knowing love at first sight was real, and that when you found the other half of your heart, life was infinitely better. I was only 26, still plenty of time to live life and settle down. But I felt ancient and overlooked when I compared myself to my younger sister. She'd found the fairy tale our parents had laid out for us when she was still in high school, and I got nothing but lonely nights and a string of dates so bad no one believed me when I tried to tell them how awful they really were. I jolted when there was a knock at the door behind me, making my ears ring since my head was still resting against the wood. Dolly growled low in her throat when she felt me tense up, so I put my hand on the top of her broad head and used the peephole to see who was interrupting my pity party. My new neighbor, the girl who moved like a ghost and spoke so softly I often had to struggle to hear what she was saying, stood on the other side. Poppy Cruz, quiet, withdrawn, but so sweet and smitten with my dog, I'd totally leveraged that love she had for my pet into a budding friendship that Poppy was obviously reluctant to have. I knew some of her history through stories from her friends and family, who were all regulars at my bar, so I was careful not to push too hard, even though all I wanted to do was cuddle her and tell her the clouds have to part on even the darkest of days. She was comfortable enough with me now to knock on my door well past the acceptable visiting hours, so there was no way I was going to leave her standing in the hall, even if that meant my whine and sob fest were further delayed. I pulled the door open, and Dolly immediately lunged for the visitor on the other side. Poppy was willowy, but she had no trouble bracing for the impact from the dog, and she seemed just as excited to receive the slobbery kisses as Dolly was to give them. "I heard you talking out in the hallway, and I just wanted to see how your date went. It didn't sound like it ended on the best note." Her quiet voice drifted to me as I shook my head and snorted. "It didn't start on a great note, either. He showed up with his mom, can you believe that? I need a glass of wine. Do you want one?" She wrinkled her delicate nose and wrestled the big dog into the apartment so she could shut the door behind her. "I don't drink, but thank you." She didn't do much of anything. The product of a very strict and religious upbringing, Poppy was as straight and narrow as one could get. She'd suffered severely at the hands of a man her father had hand-picked for her, and it was clear that every single day was one more step in the process of healing from that. "I forgot. I'm in the bar so often, I forget that there are humans in this world that can cope without alcohol." I lifted an eyebrow at her and made my way into the kitchen. "I'm not one of them." She laughed lightly like I meant her to, and followed me into the tiny galley-style kitchen. "So his mom?" Her eyes were the color of hot cider, and they gleamed with gentle humor. She was impossible not to like, and as much as I wanted a different life for myself, I also wanted one for her. I hated that her history was so ugly, but I loved that she'd survived it and was pushing herself to live beyond her experiences. That was beautiful and hinted at an inner strength her delicate appearance kept hidden. I snorted again and rolled my eyes. I thought the guy that took off halfway through the date with my wallet was as bad as it could get. I was wrong. Really wrong. "I can't believe it gets worse, Dixie." She shook her hair at me, and I wanted to reach out and touch the bronze strands. They glimmered like they were lit from within. Everything about her was meant to shimmer and shine through the shadows that surrounded her. Eventually, that inner glow was going to break free, and I hoped I was around to see it. "I didn't think it could get worse than the guy who wanted you to be third person in a menage a trois with his wife." I sucked back a mouthful of wine at that and shuddered. "Yeah, when he told me it was fine because their kids were with his parents for the weekend, I almost threw my water at him. That was bad, but this mother was still the worst. It was a shame because her son was actually really cute, and I think if he wasn't so browbeaten, he might actually be a good guy." I lifted his shoulder and let it fall. "Oh well, you live and learn." Something crossed her beautiful face. Something tragic and painful that hurt to look at. But it was only there for a second, and then her typical serene and unaffected expression was firmly back in place. "If you're lucky, you get to live. So, no more online dating?" I nodded and finished off the rest of my wine. No more. There seems to be an infinite amount of crazy out there in the world, and I'm a magnet for it.
"They can be whoever they want to be on the internet, Dixie. You'll never know who you're dealing with, and that's dangerous."
Church's warning drifted through my mind, and it made me want to hit something. He was right. He also always seemed to be looking out for me, which would be thrilling, exciting, and exactly what I wanted, if he had been doing it out of something other than some misguided need to watch out for me, because we worked together. If he cared about what happened to me because he cared about me, in some way, shape, or form, I would be over the moon. But really, it all boiled down to the fact that I was important to the people that were important to him, so he didn't want to see anything bad happen to me. I was turning to pour another glass of wine, when Poppy and I both started, as someone started pounding on the apartment door. I gasped a little, as Poppy jumped to her feet in a panic, with a startled yelp pealing out of her throat. Alarmed by the human's distress, Dolly started to growl, and stalked to the door like the born protector that she was. She let out a sharp bark that had me practically sprinting across the room to see who was causing the commotion, so that her gruff growling and sharp yapping didn't wake up the neighbors. I glanced at Poppy and frowned when I saw that she was as white as my countertop and looked like she was going to pass out. Her hand was to her throat, and her fingers were shaking so badly I could see the tremors all the way across the room. She was terrified. I wanted to fix that for her, but I didn't know how.
Dixie, open the door! I left Callie, and I need a place to crash for a few days.
The voice on the other side of the door was as familiar as my own. His words made me swear out loud as I pulled the door open without another thought, given to the fact that Poppy might end up face down on the carpet. You left Callie? I barely got the words out before my little sister's obviously furious and clearly frustrated fiancé barreled into the tiny living space. I shut the door behind him. Dolly went about her typically happy greeting once she realized she knew the tall, lanky, auburn-haired man that was now frantically pacing through my living room, raking his heavily tattooed hands through his messy hair.
She's been cheating on me, again. I was such an idiot to believe her when she told me it would never happen again after the last time. How could she do this to me after all we've been through together?
His heated blue eyes locked on me, and I could see he was struggling to keep both his emotions and the moisture trapped in his eyes in check.
We're supposed to be getting married in a few months.
His voice cracked, and I couldn't stop myself from walking over and wrapping my arms around his trim waist. Oh, Wheeler, I'm so sorry. My sister was an idiot, but in all honesty, so was he. My sister didn't know how to be an adult without him, and he didn't know how to be a family without her. They were scarily dependent on each other and had been since they were kids. Now Callie was barely 22 and had everything I wanted in the palm of her hand. The brand new house Wheeler bought for them to start their lives together, an engagement ring that made my heart squeeze with envy. I would treasure the love and promises she had been given, and part of me died every single time I watched my sister be careless and reckless with what Wheeler had handed her. You can stay here for as long as you need to. Do you want me to call her? If I did, I was going to rip her a new one. I loved my sister dearly, but at the moment I would gladly strangle her with my bare hands. I felt his broad chest rise and fall where I was squeezing him. He heaved another deep sigh and pulled back so that he could shake his head in the negative.
Not tonight.
He growled from low in his chest and roughly dragged his hands over his face.
I need a minute, or 10.
There was a delicate clearing of a throat, and we both shifted our gazes to where Poppy was pressed against the front door, like Wheeler could grow razor-sharp claws and mile-long fangs to eviscerate her at any moment. Her eyes were twice their normal size, and her teeth were buried so deeply in her bottom lip, I was surprised she wasn't drawing blood. I'm going to go. Her voice quivered, and her hands were still shaking. I felt Wheeler tense where I was still holding on to him, and I watched his eyes narrow as they locked on Poppy. His gaze was normally a mellow light blue that looked amazing with his reddish hair and the dimples that dug into his cheeks. Tonight it flared like the blue at the base of a flame, and those adorable indents in his cheeks were nowhere to be found.
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt anything. It's been a shitty night on top of an even shittier week, and I'm not thinking too clearly at the moment. I didn't mean to barge in and make an ass out of myself.
And that was why I loved Hudson Wheeler with every single bit of my heart and soul. His world was crashing down around him. He was drowning in an ocean of his own bad choices. And I would call Callie a bad choice to her face for this bullshit. And misery. But he still had the wherewithal to gentle his tone and rein in his temper so that he didn't further terrify the young woman plastered against the only exit. He was a good guy. No, a great guy. And Callie was a world-class moron for screwing around on him. Again. It's fine. Fine. Dixie, I'll see you later. She leaned down to pet Dolly one last time and then slipped out the door, shutting it silently behind her. She moved like smoke and vanished just as fast. I pulled away from the man that was set to be my brother-in-law and tunneled my fingers through my wild hair and squeezed my head. That's my new neighbor. He grunted and threw himself down on my well-worn couch. The springs protested under his weight, and then groaned again when Dolly climbed up next to him and put her head on his denim-clad thigh.
I know her. She's Salem's sister, and Rowdy grew up with her back in Texas. He brought her by when she needed a new car. I tried to sell her a 64 Bonneville that needed a little work. She would have made that car look gorgeous. She ended up with a Toyota Camry. It was a goddamn travesty. A girl that looks like that should have a car that stands out, not something safe and predictable.
I forgot that Wheeler knew a bunch of the boys that frequented my bar, because they were family, some by blood and some by something more, with my boss, Rome Archer. Rowdy St. James also worked at the tattoo shop that was responsible for the majority of the ink that covered Wheeler from head to toe. I should have realized he would have run across Poppy at least once or twice since she'd come to Denver, even if Callie tended to keep him on a tight leash. I lowered myself onto the only available seating left in my small living room and kicked my feet up so that they were resting on my coffee table. Poppy isn't really the standing out type, and she can do with a little safe. His gaze shifted to mine, and his mouth pulled into a frown.
That's a damn shame, too.
I agreed with him, so I didn't say anything else. After a solid hour of sulking, I finally got up and took Dolly out for her nightly ritual. I dug up some sheets and blankets to make a temporary bed for Wheeler on the couch, a temporary bed that was going to be as uncomfortable as hell, considering his long legs, and eventually found my way to my own bed. I wanted to cry for all of it, for Wheeler's broken heart, for my sister's stupidity and blindness to what she had thrown away, for Poppy's obvious emotional scarring and her fear of other people, for Joseph and his creepy relationship with his insane mother, and for me. Unrequited love sucked. I hated it. No tears fell as I climbed under the covers. Like I always did, I told myself there was bound to be a light at the end of the tunnel. There had to be, because I refused to live my life in the dark.
Keep your face always toward the sunshine, and shadows will fall behind you. Walt Whitman. Chapter 2. Church. You've been awfully quiet tonight. The southern drawl was lighter than mine, more lyrical and smooth. The blue hills of Kentucky rolled thick and unmistakable in Asa Cross's twang as he looked at me steadily from behind the massive oak bar he was currently in the middle of wiping down. I talk when I have something to say. No one would ever accuse me of being a chatty type. When I did choose to speak, the Mississippi Delta was deep and locked thickly around all my words. My drawl was much slower than the blonde bartender's and far less practiced. Asa used his inflection and his southern charm to work whoever was sitting on the other side of the bar, like they were one of his marks in a long con. He turned up the south in his voice to make hearts flutter, and to fool drunks into thinking he was far less sharp than he was. His Kentucky-flavored tone was nothing more than a tool he used to his advantage whenever he needed it, while my unhurried inflection reminded me of a home I hadn't seen in far too long. That was one of the reasons I never had much to say. Every time I opened my mouth, the sound of my voice, like molasses over gravel and deep as the Mississippi River, took me back to a place I had been actively avoiding for over a decade. I'd spent a little over 10 years serving my country in various capacities while enlisted in the Army. I'd been around different types of men from a million different walks of life. In all that time, I'd never met anyone as hard to unravel as the man standing across from me. He had eyes the exact same color as the aged whiskey on the shelf behind him, and they were picking me apart with a perceptiveness that made me uneasy. I wasn't used to being so transparent. Whatever shield I had up, whatever ironclad curtains I had pulled around me, Asa Cross saw right through them. "You're usually quiet, but tonight you didn't say a single word. You look like you have something on your mind." His eyebrows lifted, and that smirk on his face turned into a grin that I wanted to put my fist in. He wouldn't be half as pretty as he was with missing teeth and a bloody nose. Dixie had a date tonight. I figure you were worried about her since she's been spending time with those internet guys over the last few months. And the bar is never the same on her nights off. My back teeth clicked together in aggravation, and a low growl escaped my throat. My hands curled into fists at my sides without me being aware they were doing it. And I could feel a furious heat climb up the back of my neck. The idea of Dixie, sweet, sunny Dixie, out there with God only knew what kind of troll she was going to find on the internet, made me want to destroy everything. I wanted to break the bar top in half. I wanted to throw chairs through windows. I wanted to smash all the meticulously placed bottles displayed behind Asa into smithereens. I wanted to dropkick the remaining few stragglers nursing their last call drinks out the door, and I wanted to get my hands on whoever had taken Dixie out tonight and throttle him within an inch of his life. Logically, I knew there were decent, normal individuals using the internet to find love and sex, the sex being more likely. There were millions of people online dating. And while I thought that was okay for them, I refused to think it was an option Dixie should be utilizing. I hated the idea of her dating at all, but there was something about her meeting strangers, meeting men that hadn't had the opportunity to see her in person before taking her out, that really rubbed me the wrong way. Dixie Carmichael was the nicest girl I had ever met. She didn't have a mean bone in her perfectly curvy and petite body. She was always smiling, always laughing, and there wasn't a moment spent in her company where it didn't feel like the sun was shining directly on you. She embodied warmth and care. Someone behind a computer monitor would never understand that. They would never feel the way her innate ability to make everything seem like it would be okay made the world seem like it was worth saving. There was a lot of bad shoved at us all on a day-to-day basis, but somehow Dixie was a filter for it. And when you were around her, it seemed like the only thing you could focus on was the good she let through. She needed someone that could appreciate that. She needed a man that shined as bright as she did, and that would hold her above the shit that was always trying to drag everyone else down. I doubted that guy was on Tinder or Bumble. In fact, I doubted that guy existed at all. I don't keep track of her comings and goings. I rubbed a hand over my mouth and watched as Ace's eyebrows shot up and his lips twitched. I was a damn good liar. I lied to myself for years and years about the kind of man I was in order to convince myself that the choices I made were the right ones. But I was currently trying to lie to a man that was a professional liar. So it was no surprise that he saw right through the bullshit I was laying down. Ah, I see. You have no interest in the fact that she might be out there with a serial killer that wants to turn her pretty hair into a coat for his pet hamster. I glowered at him and crossed my arms over my chest. I was a big guy. Years of doing PT and boredom in the desert had led to a strenuous fitness routine I still maintained, partly out of habit, and partly because when my muscles burned and I made myself sweat, I could shut off all the other stuff that was crowding my head. Some of it nagging, niggling regret from the past. A whole lot of it new nightmares and realizations from my present. I had a couple inches in height on the Kentucky Charmer and a whole lot more brute strength. Yet none of that or the glower that I was sure was stamped across my face kept Asa from keeping his stupid sound advice to himself. Dixie is a good girl. She deserves someone who can give her that kind of good back. I could see the surprise on Asa's face as I finally gave him something that was wholeheartedly true. He pushed off the bar and hollered that it was time for the last few customers to finish up. There were some grumbles, but everyone left was a regular, and as soon as the clock hit 1:30, they would move towards the door without any hassle. I liked nights like this, where there were no fights to break up, no crying girls to console, no puke to clean off the floor. No amorous couples to shoo out of the bathrooms. Typically, on a night like this, I would watch Dixie scamper around, shutting the bar down, while pretending I wasn't looking at her. I couldn't help myself. My eyes were pulled to her, and when she laughed or smiled, I felt it in my gut like a punch. She did things to me that no woman had ever done to me before. She made me want to smile, and that alone was enough to have my feet itching to hit the road before I did something stupid, like fall in love, or take her up on her blatant invitation into her bed. I wanted to fuck her, but I knew if I did, it would fuck us both. She was nothing but good, and when I got good in my life, it always went bad. So I didn't allow myself, or her, to go there. She shone as bright as the sun every single day. But I was a man that knew all too well that too much time in the sun could lead to some serious burns. I'd spent the last few months biting my tongue until it bled, while she dated men that weren't me, and I went to bed alone each night, wondering why I didn't just pick up one of the barflies that hung around, making it known they were ripe for the picking. I'd never been the kind of guy that burned through women. My mother, and subsequently the women that stepped in to raise me after my mom was gone, Elma May and Caroline, taught me to understand that women's hearts were fragile, and you had to be careful with them. They tried to teach me how to take care of the good when you had it, how to respect it, and earn it. I kept the lessons close because they were some of the only things I had left of the women that shared them with me. I never played with a woman's body if I didn't know for sure her heart was kept in a separate box somewhere. I liked my hands on soft tits and full hips and silky legs wrapped around my back as much as any other guy. What I didn't like was wiping away tears, explaining myself, and dramatic goodbyes when I didn't stick around after a good time. I was picky about who I went to bed with, and I made sure they understood all my hard and fast rules about not committing or sticking around before I ever put my hands on them. Denver was just a pit stop. I rubbed my hand over the top of my buzzed head and looked down at the wooden floor under my boots. With everything that happened with Bright and Avid a few weeks ago, I think it's about time I put some space between me and the Mile High. A friend and his daughter had recently run afoul of some really nasty people. My old commanding officer and current boss and I had moved in to help in any way we could, which ended with bullets and blood and some seriously pissed off drug dealers. Holding a weapon in my hand and kicking in doors was second nature to me. I missed the fire of combat in my blood and the adrenaline coursing through my veins. I was made to fight, not to rest on my laurels. Well past time, I made my way home and tried to mend some fences. This was why Asa was such a good bartender. He pulled your story out of you whether you were planning on telling it or not. And he listened like he cared, even if my story was told in fewer words than he was used to. He nodded at me and pushed a rocks glass filled with amber liquor towards me. He typically drank scotch at the end of the night, but I was a bourbon guy through and through. I know all about mending fences, brother. Not a day goes by that I don't have to dig a hole for a new post and string up some new wire. He took a swig of his own drink and plastered that arrogant smirk back on his face.
Plus, you might as well run before that girl you've been watching when she isn't watching you fall in love with someone who ain't you. I was going to hit him. My intent must have been clear because he put his glass down on the bar and lifted his hands up in a gesture of surrender. My girlfriend is armed and she likes my pretty face the way it is. Keep that in mind, soldier. I slammed back the rest of the bourbon and let it burn its way down my throat. Fuck you, Opie. He chuckled at me and turned to cash out the register behind him. That's why they say the truth hurts, Church. Before I had been Church, I'd been Dash. And before I had been Dash, I'd been Dashiell. It was already hard enough being a kid with less than white skin and with parents in an interracial relationship. But having a name that was as uncommon as mine, down in the deep south, was fuel on an already burning fire. I'd hated it growing up, and even with shortening it to Dash, I'd still struggled with it. But now, I'd been Church for a long time, and he was a man that didn't give any kind of shit what anyone else thought of his name. I'd earned that nickname through service and blood. It wasn't a name that was given to me. It was one I had taken and made my own. Elma May was going to hate it, and she was still going to call me Dashiell, even when I begged her not to. But there was a part of me that couldn't wait to hear the stubborn old woman tell me, I call you by the name your mother picked out for you, son. That's the name she wanted for you, and you should respect it. I should. But there were a lot of things I should have done to make my mom proud that I didn't do. The truth Asa was laying down did hurt, because there was no hiding from him that part of the reason I was ready to bolt was because I really couldn't stomach the idea of watching someone else take Dixie's heart. Didn't ask you for the truth. I stuck my head out the front door and watched as the last two bar patrons climbed into their Uber. I locked the front door and shut off most of the lights and made my way back to the bar. I liked the operation Rome had set up here. I liked the people, both the ones who worked for him and the ones he served. And I liked that the atmosphere was usually festive but pretty mellow. On the nights that heads needed to be cracked and tempers needed to be tamed, I enjoyed the exertion and physicality of that as well. But I wasn't meant to be a bouncer. I had too much training, too much experience, and frankly, too many demons that needed an outlet to babysit drunks and party girls for the long haul. It was time for me to stop drifting. Asa finished up with the money and shot a glance at his phone. I could tell by the genuine smile that crossed his face and the way his gaze sparked that his gorgeous red-headed girlfriend was the one behind the message. Royal Hastings, pretty Denver policewoman, had recently moved in with the annoying southerner, and it wouldn't surprise me if she ended up with a ring on her finger before the year was out. The cop and the con had something special going on, even if I firmly believed it was doomed to fail. Most folks don't ask for the truth, but that doesn't stop me from giving it to them. He gave me a look that told me if I was any kind of man, I would take that truth he was so fond of and do something smart with it. I didn't bother to tell him Good and I didn't really see eye to eye. We made our way to the back door after a quick stop at the office to lock the money up in the safe. Asa scribbled a note to Rome and then quickly checked the security cameras. He typed out a message on his phone, and by the time we hit the parking lot at the back of the bar, a brand new Toyota 4Runner was pulling in with a smiling redhead behind the wheel. Asa clapped a hand on my shoulder and gave me a look that burned with understanding and seriousness. I felt like he was speaking directly into my soul when he told me quietly, "The real truth is, I let something good go, so I know how it feels. Got it back, and would move heaven and earth to keep it by my side. So I know exactly what you're walking away from, soldier. Be smarter than I was, and don't let all that goodness slip through your fingers." He turned around and walked backwards for a second while flashing me that shit-eating grin of his. It's always better to be warm than it is to suffer the cold, Church. He moved towards the SUV, and I had to look away when he leaned into the driver's side window to kiss his girl. There was so much intimacy there, so much passion that it made everything I swore I knew about love and togetherness pull against the reins that held it tight. I gave a half-hearted wave as Royal honked the horn at me and pulled out of the parking lot, then made my way over to my Harley. It was still nice enough weather to ride, another reason I needed to get my ass in gear and head south. In a few weeks, it was going to be too cold to have the bike on the road, and I wasn't interested in putting the beauty on a trailer and driving her like some expensive piece of luggage back to Mississippi. I was swinging my leg over the chrome and leather beast when my phone vibrated in my back pocket. It was after 2 in the morning, so I knew anything buzzing through at this time of night couldn't be good. Considering I'd recently shot Denver's top drug supplier's right-hand man and put down another one of his henchmen for good, I was dreading seeing what was waiting for me on the display. It was almost as bad as I expected it to be. The number was one I'd been ignoring since I landed in Denver months ago. It was a number that belonged to a man that I owed more than some simple conversation or a handful of words. It was a call I would have continued to ignore if it hadn't come in the middle of the night and on the heels of 3 other calls throughout the day that I had turned a blind eye to. It was time to stop running from my past. It was time to man up. It was time to be a better man, the man the person calling had tried his best to raise me to be. Hey, Julian. I rested the Harley back on the kickstand and ran a hand over my face. I could practically feel the shock wafting across the phone line. He hadn't expected me to answer, and that made me a special kind of asshole. Dash. His voice was even deeper and coarser than mine. People often told me I sounded like Johnny Cash, but Julian Churchill really had the Man in Black's rough growl embedded throughout his tone. I didn't think you were going to answer. I sighed and felt like the wild 5-year-old he had tried to wrangle all over again. Been busy. Took a while to settle in and get used to sleeping without bombs going off overhead. He didn't say anything for a long minute, and when he spoke, I could tell he was trying really hard to keep the hurt and censure out of his deep voice. You have a perfectly good bed here, and last I heard there weren't any bombs in Lowry. Lowry was the small town where I had been born and raised, just outside of Tupelo, Mississippi. There weren't bombs there, but there was a bucket load of memories that blasted me with emotional shrapnel that hurt worse than the kind I had surgically removed from my skin. I needed time, Jules. Had more than enough time, son. You need to come home. I bristled just like I always did when he tried to tell me what to do. I thought I'd squash that urge after we stood side by side and lowered my mom into the ground. But there was something about him talking to me like I should know better that always made me feel like an unruly kid. Planning on it. Have to tie up a few loose ends around here, and I have to make sure I don't leave my friend that helped me out in a lurch. Rome would send me on my way with a pat on the back and a foot in my ass if he knew the real reason I was hiding in Colorado instead of hightailing it home. He was understanding, but the man was all about family first, and he wouldn't abide the way I'd been avoiding mine for the last decade or so. I was a coward, and I didn't want a man I'd been in the trenches with, a man I would die for, and knew would die for me, to know just how deeply that weakness ran. Dash. There was a sigh, and then Julian cleared his throat, so I knew he was struggling to keep his emotions in check. Em May had an accident. I almost dropped the phone as I bolted up from my lounging position on the bike. What do you mean she had an accident? My fingers tightened around the phone to the point that my knuckles hurt, and the blood rushing furiously between my ears made hearing his response difficult. She was carrying her laundry in off the line and tripped going up the stairs. She fell backwards and busted her hip. A neighbor heard the commotion and ran to help. They had to airlift her to the hospital in Tupelo. She's also got a dislocated shoulder and a sprained wrist. She's back in the Lowry Hospital now, recovering, and she should be going home at the end of the week. Emma May was chasing down 80 if she was a day. None of us knew her exact age, and she refused to tell. She would just smile at us and tell us we kept her young. Those kind of injuries were serious for someone in their prime. In a woman Alma's age, they were life-threatening. She gonna be all right? Alma's a tough old bird. It'll take more than a tumble to keep her down. She's been asking about you. Well, if that wasn't just a fucking red-hot poker right through the guts. It was also a slap across the face with the reality of everything I'd purposely been avoiding and denying for way too long. I bought a Harley. I'm gonna have to ride it home. So I'll be there in a couple days. My homecoming was happening sooner than I'd planned, but there was no way I couldn't be there for the woman that had always been my true north. When nothing else in my life made sense, there was Alma May. She was the only safe place I had ever known, and if she needed me, I was going to be there to return the favor. I owed the woman everything. And the fact I'd waited so long to see her after years of deployment was a startling, clear reminder of why I was correct and considerate in staying the hell away from Dixie. She lived in the light, and I was far more comfortable hiding in the dark. I'll let her know. That will make her day. He paused for a second, which made me brace for whatever was coming next. She mentioned a girl. Alma told me the reason you weren't in any hurry to come home from Denver was because of a girl. That true? Son of a bitch. The truth might hurt, but the lies I told, and they were more gray than white, were going to outright kill me. There's a girl. And there was. But she wasn't entirely the reason I wasn't ready to face Julian or anyone else back in Lowry. She had been one of my reasons for sticking around Denver longer than I'd planned. She was an excuse that would buy me time, and one that wasn't entirely untrue. Do me a favor, and see if you can bring her with you. Alma would love nothing more than to see you happy, to know you're finally settling down and moving past the things that happened with your mom and with Caroline. You bring your girl home with you. And give us all some peace of mind. Make an old woman happy, Dash. You owe Alma a few years where she doesn't have to worry about you catching bullets or ending up alone. Shit. I rubbed my temples and kicked at the loose gravel under the soles of my boots. I'll see what I can do. That was bullshit. Dixie would drop everything and come with me if I explained the situation. She was too nice and too sweet to tell me no. Alma May was going to goddamn love her after she gave her a ration of hell in order to make sure she was the right girl for her boy. If the girl cares about you, then she'll figure out a way to be here. If she can't figure it out, she isn't worth your time. Come home, son. We miss you. I missed home, too. But I could do without the memories and reminders that had kept me away since the day I signed my life away to my country. It was my turn to sigh. I'll see you soon, Jules. He hung up, and I wanted to kick myself, because after all these years and all the time and effort he put into raising me, I still couldn't call the man Dad. He deserved the title. After all, it was his last name I carried around with me, not that of the man who had knocked my mom up and run. He had earned it, much like I had earned my name. But whenever I tried to say it, the word got stuck, and I fell back on something that seemed less important. It felt like I was fooling God and everyone under the sun about just how important Julian was to me if I refused to call him the only thing he had ever been to me. I was trying to trick fate so Jules didn't end up the way so many others I loved had. I was also going home, and I was going to put some sunshine in my pocket and take it with me.
Chapter 3. Dixie. I'd been working bar hours long enough that it took some major commotion and ruckus to pull me out of bed before lunchtime. Even Dolly had adapted to middle-of-the-night walks and breakfast at noon, since I was a worthless and cranky blob of indignation if I was forced to abandon my comfy bed while the morning sun was still in the sky. It was the one and only time I let myself be grouchy and hate everything, which meant anyone that knew me well gave me a wide berth in the mornings. My days and nights had been flipped for as long as I could remember. So when loud voices pulled me from a sound sleep the next morning well before noon, and well before the time that most people got up to start their day, I was livid. I hadn't slept very good the night before, so it felt like I had just shut my eyes, even though several hours had passed. But that didn't mean I was in any kind of mood to be startled awake or to play referee. I heard Wheeler's sharp tone as I crawled out of bed, almost pushing Dolly to the floor in the process. I was stunned when it was another deep, obviously angry male voice that replied, and not my sister's. I figured Callie would show up with her tail between her legs any minute now, begging Wheeler to take her back. That's what she'd done the last time he caught her stepping out on him with another guy. She wasted no time in trying to force him to forgive and forget. She knew exactly where her bread was buttered, and there was no way she was going to let the guy that had taken care of her, coddled her, given her everything she'd ever asked for, get away from her. There was also no way in hell my vain, spoiled little sister had the backbone and fortitude to weather the embarrassment of canceling her long-anticipated wedding this close to the date. If word got out exactly why Wheeler had pulled the plug on their dysfunctional relationship, Callie would wither away from embarrassment. She might want to have her cake and eat it too, but if someone pointed out how gluttonous it made her seem, she would fall apart. The girl couldn't take criticism to save her life, which was why she had kept hold of Wheeler for so long. He loved her and everything about her. At least he had until she'd drop-kicked his heart. I recognized the rough, growly voice with its southern drawl right away. I couldn't figure out why Church was at my apartment this early. And I couldn't figure out why he and Wheeler were barking at one another, like two dogs staking their claim over territory, in my living room. I thought that maybe I was still dreaming, until I stubbed my toe on the back of the couch as I rushed into the front of my apartment to see what in the hell was going on. I swore loudly and hopped around on one foot, which drew both of the snarling men's attention to me. Dolly, curious about the early morning visitor, gave me a sympathetic look, then happily trotted over to Church, who was standing with his arms crossed over his massive chest while he glared at me out of those amazing eyes of his. People would call them Hazel for lack of a better term, but Hazel didn't cut it. Hazel was too ordinary a word for a color that was so brilliantly extraordinary. Those eyes of his were something else. Pretty much all of him was designed to make vaginas surrender without putting up any kind of fight. There were men that were pretty like Asa, and there were men that stole breath with their masculine beauty like Roe Marcher. Then there were men who had the best of both those worlds like Dash Churchill. "What are you doing here before Starbucks is even open, Church?" I rubbed at my sleepy eyes and stiffened when his gaze drifted down from my messy hair, which I was sure looked like I stuck my finger in a light socket, to the oversized t-shirt I was wearing that had a giant cartoon taco on the front wearing a scowl with the words, "I don't want to talk about it," scrawled underneath. Obviously, it wasn't something I would have ever worn to bed if I'd known he was going to be my 6'4", testosterone-fueled alarm clock, but there wasn't anything that could be done about my ridiculous sleepwear or my out-of-control hair now. There was also nothing that could be done about the fact I wasn't wearing pants, and even though my taco shirt was big, it was still just a t-shirt, and barely, and I do mean barely, covered up all the things it needed to in order for me to keep my modesty. I cleared my throat as that mesmerizing gaze drifted down the length of my legs and back up to my heated face. I took a careful step behind the couch and crossed my arms over my chest to mimic his badass pose. Mine was more to hide the fact that I didn't have a bra on, and to cover up that even though he was pissed and clearly annoyed, his mere presence still had all my lady parts shaking off sleep and waking up bright and early.
I need to talk to you. I wasn't expecting you to have company.
The way he said it wasn't very nice. I stiffened and shifted my gaze to Wheeler, who was standing at the doorway, not letting Church and his palpable anger all the way into my apartment. Dolly was sitting between the two men, watching them, like they were opponents in a tennis match. She was probably waiting to see who would give her attention first, but the visual still made my lips twitch as the dog's head swiveled back and forth. Wheeler, go ahead and let him in. If I'm going to be up this early, I need coffee, and I don't want either of you or your male posturing to scare Poppy. I shuffled from behind the couch and into my tiny kitchen as my no longer future brother-in-law stepped to the side. It was only when Wheeler was fully clear from the door that I realized all he had on was a pair of low-slung jeans. His heavily tattooed torso was on full display, and his mahogany hair was mussed and messy from a night of aggravated hands pulling at it. If I was on the other side of the door and couldn't see the tangled mess of Wheeler's haphazard bed still on the couch, I would probably be jumping to the same conclusion that Church obviously was. I wanted to rush to reassure him that it wasn't what he was thinking, that Wheeler was family, but the big, broody man stomping through my living room had me eyeing him warily as Wheeler snorted and muttered, "Come on in, Church." Church's head swiveled around and his jaw went tight. I thought I was going to have to take the sprayer from the sink and hose them both down.
"Appreciate the hospitality, Wheeler."
I rolled my eyes as Dolly whined when the tension ratcheted up a notch, and it was no longer fun to be caught between the two men. "All right, enough. You both have badass names, and I'm sure you're both remarkably well endowed." I felt like I should offer them rulers to measure, just to break through the hostility. "Can we chill out with the pissing contest until after I'm properly caffeinated, please?" I looked at Wheeler because out of the two of them, I knew he would be easier to sway, with tired eyes and a weak smile. He looked properly annoyed at my comment about what he was or wasn't working with behind the fly of those low-slung jeans. He gave me a narrow-eyed look and walked over to the couch so that he could pull his shirt on.
"I'll take Dolly out for a little bit so you guys can talk."
He gave Church a pointed look as he walked towards the door with my dog, happily trotting along behind him.
"I'll only be gone a few minutes."
The implication was clear. Church better state his business and go. Wheeler wasn't a fan of the early morning wake-up call, or the judgment that came with it either. His eyes flicked to me and his lips quirked.
"You're still in fine form in the morning, I see."
I rolled my eyes at his back as the door closed.